Hi, this is Bill Teeple and Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio. Well, I've had this thing that's been sort of happening, and it seems to be helping me understand what we've been discussing all these months in trying to define art and what it's all about. I've been feeling really strong waves of love towards everything and everybody. And when I walk around, I just feel like I'm in love. And so when I focus on, like, my wife, you know, I just feel very much like this, such a beautiful person. And when I look at my friends, I have this feeling of great love for them. But it's a tangible thing. And so it got me thinking about first love, and when you first fall in love, it's a tangible thing, and everybody knows this thing. And when you cast, I'm having this experience now about looking at things, but also it reminded me of when you fall in love, and you're feeling these waves of love, and whatever you look at, it's beautiful. So then I began to equate as almost the same thing. It's almost like more from the subjective side than the object, or what you're seeing could be called beauty, and what you're feeling could be called love. But there seems to be some kind of correspondence here. Then it got me thinking that this thing that I've been describing in rather cold terms as the art content that we're trying to locate in the art has something to do with this thing that I'm describing. In other words, there's this thing that gets generated that has to do with love and beauty. And that's what we get the viewer, the artist gets into this place, the artist is able to, like, talk about it with this work of art, and then the viewer comes along. We somehow get the viewer into a state of mind where he can get into that love place and experience beauty. But the thing that's in the art that we're getting, I think, could be described as beauty. So we're getting back to this this concept of aesthetics that has run through the whole of art history that has to do with the theories of beauty. And you know, it gets very nebulous. Oh, beauty could be anything, and we could define beauty as this and that. But when it gets to be, like, associated with love, then it's a real thing we can all kind of get our teeth into. And I think that even when when somebody's making a work of art where they put some, like, ugly thing on a pedestal, but their feeling about that is it's so beautiful the way they did this thing, or they're getting off on the fact that you did that is beautiful, people might say, or that you're making this commentary about things is beautiful, and I love that. In other words, I don't think that you can get away from the fact that the thing that's driving this thing called art and the experience of art has to do with this love-beauty relationship. You guys got anything to say on this?
While you were talking, I immediately thought of the work of Judy Bales, because she takes even, like, materials that are used to make farm fencing or whatever, odd materials that you wouldn't think of as a medium for art, and she finds them beautiful, and so then she reforms them into something completely unique to give them a dignity that puts them in the spotlight and helps other people see the beauty in that and feel love for some material that maybe intellectually before that they would have just thought was worthless or, you know, utilitarian and not having anything to do with art.
But, you know, when a person puts you grab your friend and you go down to the Harley showroom and you're looking at this beautiful motorcycle, it's the exact same experience. This person loves motorcycles. And there's a flow that's happening around the how absolutely beautiful that machine is. There may be the practical level and the way it's built and the way it works and the beauty of the visual of it, but we have these places that is allowed to happen, that's allowed to flow. And then there's this communion around that.
I think part of it is very related to motherhood, because any artist is a creator, like in the same way that a mother is, bringing some new infant into the world. And every mother thinks her baby is the most beautiful baby in the whole world, no matter what the baby looks like, objectively. And even I'm having an experience this spring in my garden. It's the first time I've actually planted a major vegetable garden from seeds in the ground, not buying plants that are already started in them, you know, at the nursery, but putting the seeds in the ground. And I am madly in love with those plants, every leaf of them. I'm learning more about the form, how to recognize one kind of green from another, just because I'm getting to know them intimately by going out in my backyard and seeing them growing every day. And when I eat that food, make a plate of it and look at it, the whole eating experience is different. And they're beautiful, and my whole garden is beautiful when I go outside. But it's all, like you were saying before, Bill, they're all mixed up together, the love, the beauty, and the act of creation. It's not, I didn't make those plants. I just put the little tiny itty-bitty seed in the earth. So it's in a collaboration between my choice to do that action and all the laws of nature that produce that plant. And even an artist in the studio who's doing a painting with paint and paintbrush, there's still a collaboration going on. It's not just the artist doing something. There's a collaboration with the laws of nature involving paint and how it operates and brushes and how they work and everything else.
But what drives his hand is the love of something. Mm-hmm. That I just love to make that stroke. I just love the way the paint looks. I just love this color next to that color. I just love the trees and the sky, and I want to say something about it. And at the garden, you brought something up there, because gardening has been something in my past. And I have been absolutely in love with every element of the garden. The garden, actually, we'll talk about in another show. And I have recently noticed that because I haven't been gardening since I came here and did all this art stuff, that this sort of like love affair I was having with the garden sort of like has been quiet and in the distance. So that when I come and I look at a rose or something, I appreciate the rose more like anyone would appreciate the rose. But when I was gardening, I was so in love with every rose. I mean, it was like I was having this like intimate relationship with the roses and with the little herbs and with the edible plants and I realized that it's very much about placement of attention and how much this thing from this side we call love is poured on it. Because then it comes back, you know, when I pour that attention and that love on the rose petals, then it beams up and comes back to me as this experience of beauty. It's almost, the beauty is almost dependent on how much love you pour onto it, your experience of beauty. And also, the smelly compost heap, to me, was as beautiful as the beautiful, lovely, sweet-smelling rose, because everything had its place in the garden. And even though it was a stinky kind of smell, it was the smell of fertility to me. I knew that you would even put waste products of animals into the compost pile, and that made it even richer and deeper and darker and gooier. And the deep, dark, rich, fertile, gooey stuff, which some people might go, ew, pew, to me was beautiful when I thought of it as what it was for. And that goes into the soil and makes the soil all completely rich and fertile and makes for the garden working. It's very interesting.
You're just bringing up all sorts of branch off points that by the time you finish saying something, I don't know where to circle back to, but let's see, what was the first circle back to? Oh, I think the thing you said about attention and how when we give loving attention, like I think that's a very real thing. When we give our attention to anything, even our car, whatever, some element in our house, I think there actually is some enlivenment of that object, and that object then gives us something in return, more than just our own sort of subjective experience of pleasure from it. I think there's some enlivening of in all of nature when you walk into your garden and love your roses, as opposed to just walking in your garden and thinking, that rose might win the prize at the rose show. You know, it's like a different thing when you actually are standing in the middle of your garden, feeling this expansive flow of your heart. I think the garden totally feels that and responds to that on some subtle level.
Well, and when you realize that there's 50% women and 50% men, pretty much, although this gets a little bit distorted in places, they all fall in love, you know. There's the fat people and the skinny people and the so-called ugly people and the so-called beautiful people and all of this stuff. But each one of them finds another one to fall in love with, and they do, and they get married and all of that, and it just sort of is the way it all works. And you also look at somebody whose hobby is something, and you can't believe that somebody can be so totally, you know, obsessed with like stamp collecting or something, or some, you know, so many different
stuff.
Things, and but they are. So it makes you know. All of this makes you know. That if you place the attention somewhere, you can just go deeply in love with it, if you allow yourself. Or you can go the other way, but I don't want to favor that.
Well, and when you do have that reaction to something, whether it's a beach rock or a stamp or a flower or anything, what it's doing is expanding your heart. And that's something that feels good inside and also takes away a lot of the kind of tight little stress reactions that human beings have towards each other and towards the planet. So the more of that level of experience that anybody has towards anything, the better off the world is.
And the artist, that's kind of his area of play. That's his area of action and enlivenment, is to take objects and empower them that way and deliver this love experience that can be had around that object or that idea.
I think that's the principle of shrines. Like in, right. If you go to Greece, for example, as one country that has little shrines everywhere, all along the roadway and all that, and they're mostly Greek Orthodox shrines, but they're very personal little things, and they're often placed there to gain blessings for some particular family or to commemorate somebody who possibly died on the highway right there or something. But these shrines are so darling. You look in them and they all have little doors and you can like open them and look inside, and they have various little objects. You don't really have any idea why people chose those particular objects to put in their little shrines. But what astonished me in traveling through the countryside of Greece was that no matter how remotely placed these little shrines were, they almost always had a lighted candle or something else in there that had obviously been tended to that day. That it was just, it was an active thing. Somebody interacted with this little creation that they had made or that somebody in their family had made. And like in countries in Asia where these sort of rituals of honoring life by little objects of beauty or tiny little daily sacred rituals, it's something people took very seriously. It's an important part of life to do that.
I'm trying to make a connection to the creative process, because last night I was talking with a friend of mine who paints, and he was describing an experience of painting a portrait that actually is a large portrait, and he'd been working on it for a long time and hadn't gotten to the face. And he'd been thinking for weeks that, boy, the face is going to be you know, the whole thing. And he finally started working on the face one morning and realized not long after that that it was 10 o'clock at night and he had finished the face. And he hadn't really even looked up. And at the same time, the point he was making was that when he looked at the face he had just painted, all he could think of was, I have no idea who did that. You know, there's no way I could have painted that face. And that in turn reminded me of when I have a, you know, something that I need to write and it needs to be really solid and get something subtle across. I'll think of it every day for a week, and each time I think of it, I'll think, nah, I don't want to write that. And then after some time, some gestation period, I'll think of it and I'll think, yeah, I should write it now. And then I write it, and I write the whole thing as though it's been completely structured and it comes out in paragraphs and complete sentences and usually requires almost no editing at all. And it reads, you know, like it's been carefully crafted. But I have to, you know, assure you that when I'm doing it, I'm not carefully crafting it. I'm barely involved in the process. And yet there's this coexistence of not being involved in the process and, of course, using your skills. So you establish the skills and they're in the body or something. And then you do the creating, but you're not really the one doing it. In a sense, you're just kind of permitting it to be done because you're custodian of the body and the body's doing all the activity. But somewhere the actual ongoing process is coming from. Now, being in that moment for a prolonged period of time in the creative process, I think, is one of the reasons that artists exist, is because that art gives you an opportunity to really, you know, kind of almost artificially, you could say, create these situations where you get lost in the moment for long periods of time and then have something tangible to remind you of the process. And it also raises the possibility that what we see in a work of art is some of that process, is something, some of the magic that made it happen that wasn't actually a series of deliberate acts, even though it looks like a series of deliberate acts. If you look at me at the typewriter or my friend, you know, wielding his brushes. So I'm just trying to sort of see where, is that a different view or is that another
as you were speaking, I was trying to make the connection where we got started and where you're talking, because that's, I was trying to apply this experience I'm having to the making of art and where I'm at when I'm making art. I feel that place that you're talking about is this same place, mm-hmm. that you have to be in love with life itself, or be in love with your topic or something. You know, mm-hmm. I think you're in love with the thing you're writing about for it to flow like that. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it just out of obligation or because you're hired to do it or because you have to do it, that's when you put it off. Mm-hmm. And then it would be a strain and it would be filled with strain and it probably wouldn't be holistic and wouldn't be beautiful. Mm-hmm. Might have elements of beauty and good passages and stuff. But it seems like that zone that you're describing, because I've had this experience all the time. I'm always putting mm-hmm. things off because it doesn't feel like right at the moment. It's mm-hmm. just not, But my attention is still silently and underground organizing all of the, or some attention somewhere that I'm connected with is organizing all of these things. My attention keeps coming back to it, but I'm thinking like, not now, and you're putting it off for some reason, you don't know why. And then all of a sudden, like I'll wake up in the morning and suddenly I gotta do this thing.
Yeah.
So I'll go and I'll start typing it up. Mm-hmm. And it'll just flow out because all the ideas that need to be put together have been like working themselves out. And I do feel in that moment like I'm in this groove. Mm-hmm. It's very much a matter of being in love with my topic. But I mean, now the kind of like layering the idea of love on top of it doesn't seem to make any sense. It's simply a matter of being there with it.
Because that's what being in love.
But when I'm in, you know, when you're falling in love, you're not forcing yourself to fall in love. It's just that you are feeling like everything is just right. It's all working. And there's this this communion going on between you and your beloved. Now, the beloved could be could be your
Well, love, being in love, isn't an action. It's a state of being.
Right.
And so this state of I don't want to use fancy words for it. I'm tempted to say, you know, egolessness when you're just in the moment and it's working kind of automatically. But that's the same as being in love in the sense that they're both just states that you don't make them happen, you don't do anything with them. They become the background on which all your other experience is found.
Yeah, they pervade everything.
Yeah.
And that's where the timelessness that you were describing in the portrait painter and your writing experience come into play, because when you're in love with anything, whether it's another person or your baby or, well, your baby's another person, but if, another adult or a baby or a pet or life itself and the whole universe, you know, it doesn't matter what that, where your heart is flowing towards, when you're in that state you're just describing, you're feeling timelessness and you're feeling invincibility and you're feeling optimism and all of these things kind of feed into your whole energy that you put into anything you're doing when you're in that state.
Yeah. And I think a word that describes that place is heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it couldn't get better than this. This is it. This is why you exist. And everyone wants to achieve that place.
Yeah.
It's when you're separated, this state of separation, and you've set your ego up against the other side of the universe, that you fall into hell, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we were commenting in this conversation last night about, you know, the fact that if you're thinking analytically, you know, you really can't explain how you move your hand. And all the time, you know, and we sort of know, if we've thought about it a little bit, that we don't know exactly how we operate the body. We just have the inclination and the body cooperates, and it's sort of a mystery, but we just take it for granted and don't dwell on it. Whereas in a deliberate creative process, you find yourself forced to you find yourself given the opportunity to dwell in that mystery, that I don't know how I move my body, but I also don't know how I'm writing this entire essay or painting this entire picture. But for hours, I'm doing something that I'm not doing. For hours, I'm exposed to this process of it all operates on its own without the requirement of my participation other than in some sort of magically semi-passive way, or active/passive way. So it's sort of like being in the moment during no particular activity is sort of irrelevant, sort of forgettable. But being in the moment in a creative activity produces a result and involves, you know, vast, you know, swaths of mental skill and physical coordination and things like that, and results in something tangible that you can point to, and that becomes a symbol of that time you spent in heaven, as it were. So it's really, you know, the creative process is really an opportunity to dwell on the mystery of how any of it works, because we really don't know how it works.
And I think that that's what artists would describe as what's happening in their studio, is that they're dwelling on the mystery. They're acting in the mystery and trying to kind of like put the attention on the process itself.
Yeah.
And I think also, though, that ordinary moments that aren't in the studio or aren't something that people would describe as the creative process can be just as much
process. No, I think that Alan would include that. But it's like in a moment of action and creation, that is, like whether you're gardening or taking care of your dishes or something, that can be just as much a creative act. But I think, well, he could say this, although we're running out of time, that when you're putting it, when you have to put it to practice, in the moment, put to practice, being acting in the moment is when it really shines.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter what the action is. You can, I mean, I think we've all noticed sometimes driving the car that, whoops, wait a minute, well, I just went 20 miles and I have no idea who did that. You know, I wasn't really driving. And yet, you also know that it wasn't that you weren't paying any attention to driving. It's that there wasn't any work. And somehow the actual operation of the car and the body, you know, was automatic.
The flow of life was just
Yeah, it
charge.
Was taking care of itself. It doesn't seem to really need our help as much as we think it does.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.